This is Tom Fox. Welcome to this episode of Life with GDPR. In this episode, Jonathan Armstrong and I explore NIS2, which is a new EU initiative around cybersecurity. We take a look at what it means for compliance as well as corporate liability. Now a word from this month's sponsor of the Compliance Podcast Network, Ethoco.
Are your compliance efforts fragmented and cumbersome? Ethoco's integrated disclosure solution is your answer. By unifying your processes, we bring clarity and efficiency to your compliance operations. Just imagine a system that not only streamlines, but also enhances your ability to make informed decisions. It's time to move away from scattered efforts to a cohesive, powerful compliance strategy. Discover the power of integration with Ethoco. Start at ethoco.com/CPN to book your demo and delve into our exclusive white paper by Tom Fox, The ROI of Compliance. And you can also utilize our free ROI calculator. Unify, simplify, and amplify your compliance efforts today.
The cybersecurity is definitely changing, and we've talked about some of these trends before towards personal liability and towards prevention rather than cure. And Europe is, I predict, about to get into a bit of a tailspin over two particular changes. So first of all, the DORA regime, which is largely focused on financial services, but will affect people who provide technology or services to financial services providers, and the NIS2 regime. So what is NIS2? So we already have an existing NIS direction, Network Information Security Directive, and the NIS directive is law across the current EU and the UK. So the UK brought the current NIS directive in May 2018. And the perception has been that NIS has not been so well enforced and there was a lack of uniformity. So we're getting a new upgraded NIS directive. And effectively, it's meant to cover critical national infrastructure. But the perception is that certainly since the pandemic, our definitions of national infrastructure have very much expanded. So because of home shopping, that's going to include things like e-commerce providers, delivery firms, postal firms, and so on. So we've got NIS2 very much extends the scope of NIS, and it means that many organizations will have much wider reporting obligations. So of course, a lot of organizations are used to reporting obligations under GDPR. But even if personal data isn't affected, if there's an impact on your services or what you do, then you may have to make a report under NIS2 if you're within the NIS2 framework. As I said, largely focused on critical national infrastructure, but a really wide definition. And you may have to make a report in 24 hours and not 72. And obviously, many organizations struggle with the existing 72-hour timeline, given that NIS failures could well be more catastrophic than a data breach per se, then obviously 24 hours is going to be a pretty tough deadline to hit. One of the difficulties people have in interpreting NIS2 is that the actual implementation of NIS2 is left to member states. So whilst there's a broad framework of what the law should look like across the EU, it isn't going to be word for word the same. And who is within scope under NIS2, the exact details are likely to be left to nation states. And that's already causing some consternation. NIS2 includes a provider of managed services. So in Germany, there's a lot of academic discussion for Airbnb. If I rent out my flat, my apartment as Airbnb, and I let the guests use my Wi-Fi, then presumably, it seems under the intended German definition, I'm then a provider of managed network services, and I'm subject to the NIS2 directive just through renting out my apartment on Airbnb. And that probably wasn't the intention of the legislatures, and it certainly is probably something that your average Airbnb host is picking up and adding to the risk appetite, if you like, when they start and rent places out. There's also a lot of debate about corporate structure, which may be a particular concern to some US corporations because of the way in which they operate through subsidiaries in the EU. It may also be of concern to private equity providers, for example. And it returns to a theme that Matt and I have definitely talked about a number of times before when we've talked about Joe Sullivan and Carlos Abarca and SolarWinds, the increasing trend towards personal liability for management for cybersecurity things gone wrong. And Article 30 of NIS 2 says that the management of an entity must ensure that there are appropriate risk management measures in place, and the management, and there must be provisions in the law of each member state to ensure that management are personally liable, not just the corporation, if things go wrong. So there's a lot of work to do for entities that could be within the NIS regime. And obviously the first job they're going to have to do is to work out if they are covered. So if they offer anything that looks like it might be national infrastructure, then they're going to have to work out which bits of the business are covered. The NIS legislation as a whole should be enforced by the 18th of October. Member states have until the 17th of October, however, to issue their legislation. So time is pretty tight. You're going to have to react to legislation almost as it's coming in. So obviously, the usual things we talk about, you're going to have to work out if the legislation applies to you, and if so, to which services. You're going to have to brief the board, particularly give the board the good news about their personal liability. They will be on the hook if they don't get this right. You're going to have to look at your processes and procedures, look at those accelerated timelines to confessing about a breach, 24 hours in some cases, as I said, not 72. You're going to have to look at your team make and bear in mind the fact that because of personal liability, you might find some people in the management team aren't super keen on being the lead for a response project if they think that's going to send them, have personal consequences for them. You're obviously going to have to look at supplier contracts. So if you are an Airbnb host at the one extreme, what sort of downstream commitments do you have from your broadband provider that they'll tell you so that you can comply with your obligations? And obviously, if you're a bigger corporation, then you're going to have to look at your contracts. You're going to have to look at reporting timelines, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to have to look at technical and organizational measures, a favorite that we talk about a lot under GDPR. So what sort of systems we've got in place to stop attacks? What sort of systems have we got in place to detect attacks really quickly? So detection software is a key part of this. And obviously, you're going to have to do training. You're going to have to do rehearsals. We've talked about rehearsing data breaches before. Super critical if you've only got 24 hours to respond. And then finally, and I will pause for breath, you're going to have to look at insurance. Obviously, if there's personal liability kicking about, is the management under D&O cover? Is that D&O cover sufficient? Are NIS risks laid down specifically and covered by the policy? So a lot of work. My sense is that a lot of people in Europe are waking up to this and panicking because they think they won't be done by October. And my sense is that there's even less awareness of NIS and its likely significant impact in the US. But tell me I'm wrong, folks.
I'm not sure I can tell you're wrong, but I can tell you I'm going to pitch it to Mr. Marks, who may have a question and or comment.
Yeah, this is all very interesting. So I'm just wondering, Jonathan, how does this dovetail with the SEC's disclosures with regards to cybersecurity? I know that they're not exactly the same, but will using the NIS 2 framework help navigate through that process?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think this is just more evidence of this whole trend towards prevention, not cure. Traditionally, the US and other countries have concentrated on making things good when a breach has happened. So breach notification laws, as an example of that. And now I think we're moving into this whole phase of operational resilience and organizations almost having the onus of proving that they've done the hard work to prevent attacks. Clearly, this is all, or a lot of the motivation for that is this war by proxy we have in cyberspace, that nation-state actors are doing bad things to each other's national infrastructure, and government wants the private sector to share the lead in shoring up the defenses. And so I think they're sort of two sides of the same coin, really, that the SEC obviously wants to give comfort to investors that they're investing in corporations that are manning the defenses. But I think they also want to give insurance to the world at large that corporations or those that touch the US are making themselves more resilient, particularly to nation-state attacks on their environments.
May I just chime in quickly? Agree with everything that's been said. I just want to expand on the fact that it's not just the SEC in the United States that it has cyber as an enforcement priority. There are special task forces within DOJ now for cyber as well. So it's obviously a priority, and it's one where whistleblowers have been super important. One of our clients was helpful in getting one of the first False Claims Act cases against Cisco Systems for cyber breaches. So it's a place where it will dovetail, and often dovetails with insiders, creating, again, the risk, as always, that if you don't disclose your problems and your SOC compliance and your NIST compliance, then an insider might do it for you. Your CISO, your CIO, they're all points of vulnerability for you.
I think that's a really great point. And obviously, if you've got a CISO who's facing personal liability if he covers it up, and personal reward if he doesn't, that choice comes somewhat easier to go public rather than private, doesn't it?
It sure does. And then, Jonathan, to stay on your side of the pond, the Serious Frauds Office is talking about paying rewards to whistleblowers. And we're also seeing the Labor Party has it as part of, David Lammy has it part of the Labor Party's platforms. Those rewards may be coming to your shore soon.
Yeah, we do have rewards already for antitrust cases, which are relatively small. I think we talked about the SFO reward system in an earlier podcast. Let's just say we're thin on detail at this stage, but whether the reward is £20 of Costa coffee vouchers or whether it's a proper share of the bounty like in the US, let's just say watch this space.
Compliance Podcast Network is sponsored this month by Ethico. Ethico is a leader for compliance champions like yourself with its ethics and compliance optimization system built to turn goals and guidelines into real ROI for your program. For more information and a special white paper, go to ethico.com/CPN. If you've enjoyed this episode, I hope you'll subscribe, rate, and review wherever great podcasts are listened to. The award-winning Life with GDPR is a production of the Compliance Podcast Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.